Thank you. So my name is Samu Pettersson. I'm a PhD student here, and I'm kind of a cross-scientist in many ways that I'm studying aquaculture. I'm also studying like organic matter and the environmental technology. And I'm very strong in chemistry section. So I would be telling you, first I would say that I have no definitive answer to this problem or case, and I prefer to spark conversation and make you think about the possible solutions for this matter. What makes this so hard is that it's not only the science and the numbers, because aquaculture and fishing in general are also social problems. More about that later. So a little bit about me. So I'm a third year doctoral student. As I said, aquatic sciences, environmental technology and chemistry are my strong points. And my current project is to improve RAS, which is the recirculating aquaculture system, and more about that later. And the points in there are water quality improvements with oxidizing agents like ozone and hydrogen peroxide, removal of flavors with these compounds, and monitoring of the water quality and the effect of the ozone and hydrogen peroxide with HPLC, so high performance liquid size exclusion chromatography. And outside my work, I usually play music and treat our dog Della that is there. 2 years old, golden retriever. Before I go here, I would like to hear about, hands up those who think that they know about aquaculture.
Some.
Yeah, that is, some is, okay, yeah, okay. Yes. Take everything that I say with a grain of salt and educate me if I'm totally wrong about something. So, because when you're doing your PhD, you're going so deep to some things that you like, well, you forget already what you learn in first year, and like the big picture can be some problematic sometimes, but I tried my best. So the like obvious thing is that the world population grows all the time, which means that there are more mouths to feed, and already about 9% of the world's population is affected by hunger, like constant hunger. That's pretty bad. Like you're angry when you are hungry. And then there's the question how to achieve proper nourishment for everyone, that you shouldn't be hungry. And there's no clear answer to this because the climate is changing, the politics are changing, people are changing. But this is the most current climate that we are in. And this is very heavily about this zero hunger goal number 2. So this is the background that my presentation goes to tackle, that how to maximize the food production for everyone. So a little bit about aquaculture then. So the aquaculture and fisheries, wild fish, ground fish, the output to the global food production is about 11% when measured in value. The fish is pretty expensive, at least in here and somewhere most of the world. Also, when compared to like vegetables and some chicken. So it kind of inflates the value and this percentage, but that was the best, most reliable thing that I can say about the aquaculture and the all around food production. But the agricultural part is in the steep rise, as you can hear, see here. This is taken from the United Nations, that the FAO report that they do every year or every second year, I'm not sure. But this was from this year. And you can see that the aquaculture part grows really rapidly when the captured fish part actually maybe goes down a bit. And there's a very good reason for that. And the fish consumption is also rising very heavily as a food product. But the location, of course, affects a lot, because if you are living like in, I would say, middle of the desert, well, you are not going to eat a lot of fish. But if you live, I would say, like in Indonesia, then maybe you are eating a bit more fish than if you are living like in a Saharan desert or something like that. But that's something that we are trying to tackle, like everyone could eat a bit of fish. And why you should eat fish? It's because it is very efficient to grow fish. These are for feed conversion ratio, FCR, and it's the amount of feed divided by the growth that is happening. And if it's over one, it means that, well, if it's one, then if you put 1 kilo of feed for the whatever you are growing, it is going to grow 1 kilo. So as we see, the beef is that's not efficient. That's horrible. And for pigs, it will be better. And for chicken, it's actually pretty efficient. But then comes the fishes, and we can actually see that the feed conversion rate is very close to one. That's good. That's why you should feed fish and you should grow fish. Actually, in some cases, the conversion rate actually can go below one. So you put like 1 kilo of feed for the fishes and they grow 1.2 kilos. That's feed. I know it here sounds pretty weird, but that's how they work. And it's probably because they can feed on something that grows on water there by accident, or other fishes. So let's do something. But yeah, they're very efficient to grow. Especially the trouts and the salmons are very efficient ones. The more like the species that require more warm water are usually a bit less efficient, but in general, it's usually between one and two. So that's very good. Yes, the tilapia, that's the most farmed fish in the world, I think, currently. And then the rainbow trout, that's the most farmed in Finland. And Atlantic salmon, that's most farmed in Norway and like Chile. And fish is also healthy. There's a lot of good nutrients and fats and everything that you would like to want. Like if you're doing a lot of sports, you would like to eat a lot of cod, because there's not much fat, but a lot of protein, a lot of water. Okay, and why the part where the like wild fisheries, why the catch isn't growing, is because we are overfishing almost all of our current stocks. So the stocks are going down and you can't fish them anymore. Good thing about wild fish is that they usually don't go extinct, because at the point where they are so scarcely populated in the sea, it's not any more commercially available to fish those fishes. But when the population plummets, it can take 100 years to it grow back to its like somewhat stable size. And like critically plummeting species are now like tuna. If you go here to the Pai tuna, it's not tuna, it's something that's resembling tuna, or very close species, and about 20% of that tuna is actually another species. So, because it is so much overfished, so I don't recommend you to eat that. Well, we had catfish in Finland about, I would say, 1800, 1900, about there. But we fished it to death. It was a big fish. It was over 100 kilos. But then the climate actually get a bit colder, and they prefer warm weather, warm waters, and they were like really easy to fish because they eat anything. You could like maybe just throw there your no bait, just throw your rod there and well, you get that. So it was fished out. And maybe in Middle Europe there's still some left. But yeah, mainly all the stocks are overfished. And this is problematic in many ways because it's a social thing that if you are like people in the, how say, well, like Philippines, that's middle of the ocean, many islands. Well, of course, yeah, they have fished for thousands of years. And then you go tell that actually you can't fish anymore. Would you do that? What would be the, I think there would be a quite of outcry. So that's the like hard social part of the things there. It was fine when there wasn't so much people, but when the number of people are growing, well, it eventually became a problem and now the stocks are dwindling. But then the aquaculture that's solving this, our fish stock problem, that's somewhat, at least we are trying. It's not a new thing because it has been around about 5,000 years and like many other things that first were invented in China, it has been recorded that some ponds and fish growing there has been first tried in China. And that's debatable if it was actually 5,000 years or 4,000, but anyways, but confirms that at least Romans were growing fish in their ponds and were actually quite skilled in that. So it's not a new thing. First, they were just like very normal ponds, maybe artificial ponds or some sort of them just dig to the ground and then they feed them with something and breed them some way, how to say. Okay. But there are, of course, now many different ways to carry out aquaculture. These are the ground ponds. So you can see that the water comes in, then there's usually somewhere there, go with it goes out. These are usually flow-through systems that the water comes and it goes out as fast as like the when you minus the coming water from the exiting water, it should be zero. This is the most traditional way, still done in many places, but usually not like as a primary production means. Usually for the like breeding and or maybe juvenile ones or something like that. And then there's like a more modern flow-through system that this looks like especially done for the juvenile and fries and just very small fishes here. And usually flow-through system also for them because as the younger the fish, the more fragile they are, the like any disturbances in the water system and anything like that. So you want the best quality for them. And there's then there's those net cages that are usually popular currently. And like, well, in Norway, they use those like exclusively. And well, usually salmon, not much else. Yeah, here in Finland, Åland, like archipelago, they use those. There are restrictions. Like for you have to have enough water in the place where you are going to put those cages because there will be emissions. And you want them to sediment as deep as possible because otherwise it causes eutrophication for the area. And another thing is that, like, where you can imagine if a storm comes and those cages break, it will be a disaster. So they usually want to use a safe place for them. So the Finnish archipelago is fine for that, many like days or something where you can put those. But rarely those are deep enough. So that's a limiting factor. And then there's, but the Norway has the fjords, and that's like the best place for those to be. They are deep and they are extremely safe from the waves and wind and storms. So now about the problems that traditional aquaculture has. I refer to traditional aquaculture every other method than RAS. So, because RAS is like, well, it's pretty industrialized. So the problems with the aquaculture are, well, some be pretty obvious, some not that obvious, but well, the most obvious one, emissions. So they are mainly nutrients, uneaten feed, bacterial biomass, and the feces of the fishes. And of course, they secrete the ammonia and the nitrogen compounds. So it affects all these parts here. Like, and well, you can also put there that if you are like farming a fish that doesn't belong to the current ecosystem there and it escapes, it can cause a disaster. Like, well, the rainbow trout that we farm mostly in Finland, it's not like it doesn't belong here, but currently it can't reproduce because waters are too cold. So it's fine that our climate isn't warming or anything. So yeah, just to protect our current aquatic ecosystems and their own species. And well, obviously, is if there's a lot of emissions, it can be also like antibiotics and drugs and everything that you need to like treat your fishes. Well, it then comes this, and if it defiles your waters, well, that's obviously a pretty bad thing. And then comes the responsible consumption and production. It's kind of has to do all these, but like to do this responsibly is all well. Like traditional aquaculture is very hard to do traditionally this like responsibly. Well, the water usage is obvious one. The big facilities can easily take few cubic meters per second water, so thousands of liters per second. And then you can make your choice that do you want to drink that water or do you want your fishes to be healthy? Usually they just drink water and then grow some vegetables. Not that it's a good source of protein, but well, you got to drink water. And then the feed part. Nowadays, I think most of the feed that in Finland are given to the fishes in aquacultural side are mostly made from the like plant material. That's really good. And like soy and some other stuff in there. I don't remember exactly what there it is. But the fishes are almost exclusively carnivores. So many of the types of feed that you give are made from the like other fishes or something like that, then it's not so responsible anymore because you are like the environmental impact of the aquaculture is then rising. One of the really good products that has been in the market for some time now is the Baltic Sea feed that they use the like a thrash fish in Baltic Sea, that herring and roaches and them like that, and then made feed out of them. So it actually helps the Baltic Sea because they are taking away those fishes. They have told it earlier also, but because the Baltic Sea is so polluted and there was every kind of like mercury and PAH toxics in the fishes, you couldn't make these feeds. Because otherwise they would accumulate the like trout and salmons, and that would be a pretty bad disaster. But now they have methods to like take away those toxins from the fishes, so they can make those now. And I think it has been pretty successful this far. Okay, so the possible solution is the recirculating aquaculture system. And the main appeal is that the recycle is to recycle the used water, so we can diminish the need for clean water. And this has been pretty successful in a way that we can recycle about 98% of the water, so almost all. And this is made possible with the multiple water treatment steps. So here is the like there's no one standard for these systems, but in principle they go like this. So this is the fish culture tank. There are your fishes that you want to grow. And also I forgot to mention that aquaculture is more than fishes. It can be algae and shrimps and oysters and anything really that you grow in water. But fish is the main problem. Here the water quality should be the best. And from the bottom of the tank, it usually goes to the, well, micro spring filter can be, and radial flows, gas settler, the removal of the solids, suspended solids there. And there are many ways to do this, like swirl separator, but the micro spring filter is usually pretty standard. Well, in this case, there's use a fluidized sand biofilter. So already like sand filter, it removes more solids. And also in here, it's also act as a biofilter. This is a very important part of the system because it transforms the harmful nitrogen compounds like the ammoniums and nitrite to the nitrate that is less harmful. And so this part is really important. The ammonia is really toxic to fish. If the concentrations rise too much, the fish will die immediately. And this part also is the one that causes usually problems, because there are bacteria that use the nitrification for the transformation. And they are pretty if the water quality changes too much or something like some disturbances happens, this bacteria can die very easily. And then, well, then there's a disaster. And then usually the aeration to strip the carbon dioxide and add some oxygen there. And then there is the usually some kind of disinfection like UV or ozone. And then it's just, as it says, recycles all the time. Now this is, it offers many other good things also, like control, like environment is totally controlled. You can control pretty much everything from temperature to the oxygen to the, well, anything. So less disturbances and faster growth because they grow all the time. This produces as much effluence as the normal aquaculture, but they are concentrated, so they are easier to treat. Like it's sludge and everything that comes, so it's easier to treat. Well, the location is much more flexible. Like here you can see the Varkaus factory area, and they have made one of these facilities in their area and use their water purification and their energy, because the factory is absolutely huge. Their like needs are very little compared to them, so they have made a good deal there. So normally you couldn't throw like fish like just next to a factory. That would be almost impossible. But here the flexible location is really like good thing. Your customers are closer. You don't have to carry fish anymore, so long distances the fish is better. Then you don't have to pay so much about the cooling them. That's a very good thing, because normally the all these aquacultural facilities, whatever they are like really far away from towns and cities. And I worked for one, and I traveled 60 kilometers to my work and home, so 120 kilometers per day and less manpower needed. Almost everything is like automated. So I think this facility that should produce about 1 million kilos per year has like 12 people there, I think. And most of them are technicians. Okay, then the cons. The energy. This is like a factory, so it requires a lot of energy. Well, a lot, but like traditional aquaculture, you have pumps, and that's about it. Not that much energy costs there. Good thing you don't have to heat these, because the biological processes that are going to biofilter and the fishes actually produce so much heat that even those like huge warehouses, you don't have to heat them. They are like 16 degrees throughout the year. Yeah, then it requires advanced knowledge, because this is like a factory. You have to have engineering, you have to have a biologist there, you have to have someone who understands or how to treat your effluent, how to like all little things that can go wrong. And yeah, any disturbances in this environment are pretty much catastrophic. Like, it just happened in the, well, in Åland, there should be a 3 million kilos facility that should be like one of the biggest in the world currently. Well, they contacted some virus there. And what happened was that they had to kill all the fish there, drain all the systems dry, disinfect them, and then wait about 3 months to get them running again. So that's a huge financial loss, and it's pretty bad because yeah, this is expensive. And if you are like experiencing that kind of problems, and you are already taking a big loan, that's really bad. And that's one of the main like things that is holding back this. Usually you don't get these disturbances. But if you are greedy and you try to move too fast, you are guaranteed to fail. That's the like epitome of this method of aquaculture, that if you are greedy and go too fast, you will fail. So a bit about my own research. So I'm researching the off-flavor problem in RAS. And it comes, well, yeah, you have fish and you have another fish. Another one tastes bad. Which one you are going to like choose? Yeah, that's pretty obvious. And then, well, we can always bring the like package that this is environmentally friendly. But the environmentally friendly like package, it's actually more expensive than the one that's, well, not that environmentally friendly, but it tastes better and it's less expensive. So which one you are going to pick? Yeah, so that's like the fish is already, at least in Finland, pretty expensive when like compared to the chicken and like pig. But yeah, that's a pretty big problem in RAS, because, well, they are already in financial problems in facilities because it's so expensive and it's so new. And now they have that off-flavor problem, and it's causing more problems with them. So yeah. And like, but it's just a tasting. It's just like the normal fish, but it just tastes a little muddy. Actually, when I have offered this fish to some Asian people that have come like to visit, they are like, it's just incredibly good. And that's because in Asia, they mostly farm like carp fishes, or that are closely related to the roaches, and they are bottom feeders. Those fishes, like, they have the naturally a bit them like muddy odor there. So that's not a problem today. So it's kind of also what you taste, what you have been eating your life. And if you smoke the fish, then the odor is gone. But I don't want to smoke all my fish. And well, if you are really hungry, you don't really like Oh, this tastes bad, I'm not going to eat it. Well, obviously, yeah. But because it's this is so expensive to make this method, this is mostly done in the countries that where people are have like have money and they have enough food so they can pick. But well, we'll see in the future. So the flavor-inducing compounds. Well, there are many different about. Well, I think about 72 have been identified, and there are expected to be over 100 of these that cause odor and bad taste. And the most common ones are geosmin and Metulisobornell. This is the would be the Metulisobornell, and that's geosmin there. Yeah, they are largely responsible for the matty taste and odor in fish flesh, and they can be tasted in very small amounts. And they are usually the microbial life produces them in water. And because the rash water is recycled, it concentrates with these compounds very fast. And they are like lipophilic, so they are transferred to the fish immediately, but it takes 2 to 3 weeks to keep them in the fresh water to get them away. So that's a huge financial loss for these RAS facilities, that they have to keep them in flow through water to purify the bad taste away from them. Yeah. Well, that's what I said already. Yeah, that's like how many hours they have kept it in the fresh water and how like slowly the concentration in fish flesh are declining. And my aim is to counter the problem with off flavors, with oxidation, so with the hydrogen peroxide and ozone. And I'm not going to the detail, but so far the results have not been really convincing, so I'm most likely going to dump this idea soon. But well, you can read it from the papers then. And I'm also researching that HPLC. And yeah, I just monitor like the different wavelengths of like humic, fulvic, and tryptophan and tyrosine in the water. And the ozone usually like oxidizes them really well. So you can see the changes in the organic material in the water really easily with those. This is hydrogen peroxide treatment. This is control. And these are like ozone treatments here. And you can see that these are weeks that when the treatment started, the fluorescence like declined extremely fast. But as the hydrogen peroxide and the into control release, there wasn't that much of any change. It changed, but here it stayed stable and much lower than in other. But that's just what I do. Okay, then about the rust and the future. Yeah, it's not straightforward because it's a trade-off. You are trading like the water reliability to be like energy. I believe that this is the technology of the future. It just, well, it requires political will and requires some right management, but I think this is the way to produce enough protein for the people in the future. And it clearly have a positive effect for the clean water and sanitation and zero hunger goals. Because you don't need the water, you can produce a much more fish much more efficiently. But then the big questions are the energy and the feed composition. The feed composition, if you use the responsible fish like the Baltic Sea feed, then that's problem like solved.
Yeah, because I was thinking if you are not feeding them with like animal resources, then these omega-3 acids are not in, so the quality of the fish,
Yeah.
it is
Yeah,
going down.
it's not that good then, but of course the feed manufacturers are aware of this and try to like make it better and better all the time. But I really like the Baltic Sea feed. Everyone should use them. And then comes the like the that energy thing. This requires energy, and because that energy point, I think the viability for the usage in the developing countries, which are the ones that should should receive help in the food department. I don't think this is yet suitable in there in the big processes, because there's no funds and there's not enough maybe knowledge yet. But
I was thinking when you were saying that the temperature is stabilized in 16 degrees, so I was thinking, you don't need to warm up the temperature, but in winter time in Finland, and you have this peak, they need to maintain the temperature constant, so there is energy going.
No.
How they make?
Because the biofilters, obviously, if you have a 1 million kilo facility, they are huge. And
but I mean in the installation, the temperature needs to be constant, or not?
Yeah, it stays about in the 16 degrees, because the water, of course, there are huge masses of water. It keeps the energy better in there. And the biological processes that are going in the biofilter and in the fish tanks actually warm up the facilities. Okay. I was pretty amazed when I heard that, because the facility is huge. But we don't need to warm it. Nice. These are the main factors that in the poor countries inhibiting the this technology, usage of this technology. Well, maybe not to this. But and then the energy part again, that is, it's pretty hard. If you use as energy source a coal plant that produces your energy, and then you have the rust there, then you save water, but I don't know at what would cost. Then that's the trade-off. So it would be best if there would be renewable energy sources that you could use, some factories that actually produce energy in Äänekoski, that bio factory there, it actually produces 4% of the Finland's energy. So that's one of the places where you can very easily put these kind of RAS, you get the energy, and that bio factory has its own water treatment plant. You can use that maybe, because the factory is huge. Well, your facility is huge also, but it's not even close to the potential that we is needed. But that energy part is really the key also. But in the countries that are, when it goes to the, if there's funds, but there's no water, even both really that much, you can have that energy there. And some Arabic nations that have a lot of oil, they have energy there, they have a lot of funds, they have actually knowledge, but they don't have water. They could make uses in some way. And it could be really good for them.
Or in a country that you have a lot of sand.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Or wind.
Yeah, yes, wind and sun would be the main contributors, because, hydroelectric energy is, it's kind of bad to dam your rivers. But so a quick recap that the aquaculture is efficient, but the location is primary limiting factor. As we know, you can put your aquaculture in the middle of the desert, expect rust. But RAS can tackle these problems, but requires already existing infrastructure, funds, and knowledge, because it's advanced way of doing this. But thank you.